Yes, we will.
Sure. And read later.
God's sister, Chekhasana Maharaji.
She's
the main reason why the gardens are looking so nice.
Mm-hmm.
She was involved in deity worship, Bhakti and Shaolin.
Uh-huh.
Comes from New Zealand. And of course, you know, Tapasini.
I've seen her somewhere before.
But Edward, he's doing multimedia university.
He's studying in living here.
Yeah, studying.
Okay.
And originally from the US.
Mm-hmm.
He's living in Bhakti Dale, full distribution, his main service.
Uh-huh.
Bhakti Allen is from England, he's been here about a year. When he came off the plane, the first place he went to was our restaurant,
Mm-hmm.
basically. And Bhakti Carl,
Hare Krishna.
He's local, he does temple service restaurant. Mm-hmm.
From Perth?
From Perth, yeah. Uh-huh. And Graham, he's a local Western Australian, also book distribution.
Okay.
And the vice president, Sita Ramakshan.
So it's a small group, but it's quite cosmopolitan international, huh? Yeah, it was interesting. I was just noticing when I get off the plane, and they had the announcement and the signs saying about flowers and fruits and things. Please deposit them. The idea of keeping certain, I guess, germs and insects and things out of the country. I was thinking how this is, I mean, everyone's trying to protect something, but usually people are not aware of what the real gems are. They're not having a real deep understanding of what constitutes genuine value, because all these things are so relative. But still the idea is significant for devotees also, that we want to always be conscientious about protecting our devotional creepers. There's all kind of, you know, contamination that's around that can weaken the bhakti lata bija. And so we find from time to time, may become somewhat inattentive, and something comes in and causes disturbances. Or sometimes we're not taking sufficient inventory, and without taking inventory, it's hard, it's like in the business, without taking inventory, it's hard to really know what your achievements are, what your failures are, what's good, what should be given more attention, what should be minimized, until it becomes very obvious. So we know some of the things that can sneak in our devotion, that can cause a lot of mixed devotion if we're not careful. Even take our devotion away. Of course, the weeds and the apparatus, like the mother's doing the nice flowers. So there's the significance about sometimes planting and then making sure that there is the nourishing that goes on. We have to be careful about animals and also careful about the weeds. Because the weeds, they can choke the planter. Sometimes in our devotional experiences, we find that we just feel dry, we feel choked up. This can have a lot to do with the weeds growing as much or stronger than the plants. We have different kind of weeds that come in, different types of anarthas, we're not careful. So we know in terms of aparads, we can make shave aparad, fences in our services, in terms of not being punctual, not being clean, even sometimes doing the wrong thing in good intention. We often, in many of our temples, we emphasize about the importance of avoiding the nam aparad, offenses in the chanting. Then there's dam aparad, or offenses that one may make in the holy pilgrimage places, the holy dams, even in the temple itself. And of course, Vaishnava aparad, Guru aparad, one often leads into another. But while we're trying to be careful about the aparads, because our entire devotional process is based on the things that we are to do in order to attain Atmavidya self-realization and pure service, But also the things we have to avoid both go like parallel. It's not just a matter of, if we only know what is to be done, that's wonderful, but then there'll be a naivety about what is to be avoided. Someone understands that they're supposed to do certain things, but they're not sure about what is also to be avoided, then there can be often confusion, and one can imbibe or accept things that are unhealthy. And we surely are not just into the don't do type of mentality, this avoidance. You know, this is kind of the mentality of nirvana or those who follow Buddhism and other systems of similar posture, where they're seeing material life brings misery, variegatedness, heterogeneity brings problems. So they're considering to be void of all of these things, to be void of sambandha, to be void of relationship, to be void of interaction, to be void of the dualities, and just somehow throw it out and everything will be wonderful. There's nothing so wonderful about just being free of anxiety. Just like peace is not just the absence of war, or happiness is not just the absence of attacks and distress and sadness. I mean, that's a state that's better than the confusion and the pain. But pain is not just the avoidance of the suffering, but it's about being healthy. It's about being holistic. It's about being complete. So happiness is not just being free from some of the ongoing assaults and attacks. Then we think, oh, no, I'm okay, I'm happy. Problems are not as bad today, so I'm happy today. But for many people, this is how they live. Their life is based on suffering and minimizing their suffering somewhat and feeling that that's success. Or their life is based on finding ways to suffer peacefully. So it's not quite as bad as tolerating the suffering. But we understand that this is not really the position that is natural, have to be suffering. This is why we are clear that the whole material energy, material body and culture is a disease, because it's still fixed on death and birth, constant samsara. So we're trying to protect our creepers in such a way that we'll not have to be subjected to this reformatory type of environment. Each country, for instance, has some differences, some unique idiosyncratic kind of patterns. But then wherever we go in the material world, the basic similarities are there. No similarities are people struggling, trying to somehow to be happy in rather hostile environments. Because from the Adi-Devic, Adi-Bhautic, Adi-Atmic, those things we just cannot avoid, whatever place we are in the world. And so we want to protect our devotional creepers by being able to access the platform of Sudha Bhakti. You know, the bhakti can be mixed by Kama Mishra Bhakti, where the bhakti becomes mixed with fruitive desires, too much interest just in fruitive kind of things. And this can weaken the devotion. Or the bhakti can be mixed by Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Sometimes we can be more into knowing things than becoming. We can become more fixed into trying to understand something just for the sake of understanding. And at the same time, not really trying to practice or to apply it. So such bhakti will be intruded and will be contaminated. It's like the country wanting to avoid contamination from other places. And then the bhakti can be impacted upon by yoga mishra bhakti. That's when there is a great attachment and a fixation on mysticism and psychic phenomena and requirement of cities. So one wants to be more involved with experiencing the Shakti that belongs to Krishna rather than honoring the Shakti Ma. And so in each of these cases, someone is engaged in the royal process of bhakti yoga, trying to acquire this knowledge of Raja Vidya, the culture of bhakti, but it's not quite happening, it's not growing, it's not developing properly because of these either aparats or, you know, these intrusions that have come in due to not protecting the creeper. So Prabhupada has given us all these wonderful sinners. He's so nice. I think so many places in the world there are temples and projects. And the temples and projects are designed so we can come together and we can work on our individual devotional creeper, nourishing of it, and be in an environment that helps to protect it. Because we see that once we're out of association, then the mind, the senses go wild. And if we're not having healthy association, and also the tendencies for a deviation become strong. And in association, we are to remind each other about the goals. We are to set good examples by our own, by the role models that we emanate and radiate. And in such way, then the collective bhakti increases and makes it easier for each person. And when there's too much mixed devotion, then not only will it let Maya come in so many ways, but it will cause sort of a general dull mood. Sometimes you see sometimes environments are just kind of dull because people's faith is not strong. They don't have services. They're not dedicated to services. They're a few months one place, another month another place, another year another place. Prabhupada was very happy when he could see that devotees were being determined about persevering to do something. Because in this way, the mind gets more locked in when you have a service, when you have a project, and the mind gets captured so that it doesn't get dragged away by the mind. When the mind is not so fixed in the service, then it means that all this energy is scattered. So it has to go somewhere. And so it's more likely to go backwards than forward. So we also protect our creepers and nourish the bija, bhakti bija, by having services and a project that we can offer, put our mind and senses into, and then gradually purification process sets in with the service and the proper service attitude, such. So I'm happy to be here. I was trying to come even some years back. I wasn't qualified to come, so I didn't get a chance. I'm not qualified now, but probably by your mercy, you've tolerated me to be able to come. It's perfectly special in many ways because it's so far away, and so that could be a bone. It can be a complexity also. It can be a bone because you do get certain kind of protection by being a little bit isolated. And it gives you a chance to kind of work and appreciate each other more, hopefully. At the same time, you may not get as many visitors as some places do that. You're kind of more accessible. I think so. You get a lot of tourists coming. They come. I was just surprised. I was coming from America, then South Africa. I'm on about a 30-country tour or so. And I was just amazed to see the number of people who were coming from South Africa to Australia. The plane was like totally packed. I think some people didn't even make it. It was so overbooked. They're saying, oh, they must know that devotees are there. They're going because they know something is special, but they don't realize what's really special. So the devotees have these temples in different places. So they should really visit the temples. But of course, most people are rabid for running after sense gratification. And they're frightened because they're bored in the places where they live. They're bored. They're thinking, if I go somewhere else, if I have this experience, then my life will become more exciting. So they're looking, going places, spending their money, trying to buy some excitement. So life goes on like that for most of them. So many extracurricular things. They try so much, make so many adjustments in their lives, change their professions, change their wives, change their husbands, change their sexes even these days. And still, each situation has its own problems. And so we don't want to have that kind of mentality. We're thinking that something outside is going to really make us happy. Not ultimately. But as we are able to have alteration of consciousness, we're involved more in conscious raising activities. And ultimately whatever is in is manifested externally. You can't just keep trying to do things, bring things, to bring some internal pleasure. We'll just give some stimulation to the senses and the mind, and that will later become disappointing. So, happy to see so many new devotees also. That means you guys got life. Huh? You just see only old trees, that's wonderful. You see also new plants and new trees. You realize that the process is going on. Somebody's doing gardening, they're doing farming. So they're harvesting the old crops. Same time they're planting new. That's a good sign. But if we have only new devotees and no old devotees, then that's a problem. Like in the business, if somehow you got to keep making new people and the old people go, then that's dangerous. Because then so much energy is you're diminishing returns. You're putting so much in, there's a little coming out. But it should be the freshness of the new devotees and also the wisdom of the older devotees. That's culture. Culture is not only the elderly, not only the youth. Said you have different ages, different distributions of labor, different experiences. Then it creates a culture. So I'm here very briefly, long enough to maybe to milk a cow. Any cows around here? Enough chance to pick a few roses. So thank you for allowing me to come. Anybody any questions?
Just thinking the evolution of ISKCON has become more congregational based rather than ashram based. Is that something Srila Prabhupada envisioned would happen, or he would be hoping the ashrams would also remain strong like they seemed to be originally?
I'm sure he wanted both. That the temples are more like the training centers. And we understand that most devotees, you know, should and will get married. And for the majority of devotees, the temple environment, per se, the property of the temple, is not going to be sufficient for maintaining a household arrangement. Not the best thing in most cases for the children. They need a little more space. And you need griha, you need, you know, an arrangement where you can also be able to study better, be able to invite people over, other things. And since Prabhupada wanted us to, he said Krishna consciousness is, you know, it's not only for us, but it's for everybody. And the idea is that we have, you know, we have a nucleus, but at the same time that it's having effect in many different places. So the temple is mainly a place where we come and we kind of refocus, recharge ourselves, remind ourselves about what we're supposedly always doing. You know, sometimes people, they go to their churches, their mosques, their cathedrals, their temples and shrines, and it's like that's the only time that they're religious. And then the rest of the days, they're just doing something else, doing their own thing. But for us, it's not that when we come to the temple, then we access our devotion. But coming to the temple acts as a catalyst to remind us, to reinforce us, help us to focus more, help us to kind of, you know, get updates, to check in that sense. And so community, village, cities, they're centered around the temple. Vedic culture, I think, are centered around the temple, but the temple wasn't like to be all-encompassing that way. So there's a need for a balance, of course. Some projects, especially some of the rural projects, we have so many devotees living around and just a handful of devotees in the temple, and basically everyone's just into the economic development. So it becomes hard to get people to do the deity service, hard to get somebody to cook. Even though you have a host of Brahmins, it can be very, very difficult. The other side is that everyone's in the temple, and then all of a sudden the devotees start getting married, and then they then have a clue about what to do for economic development, for maintaining the family. Because there's very little congregation and very little effort in that, you know, in that direction. But the congregation is stronger, and we are hoping in years to come that the transition will be a lot smoother. As more devotees are having their businesses or managing in such ways that they're working together, creating some devotee enterprises. Then when someone is thinking of making a shift, they can still be within the devotee community. They can still be associating with devotees, or they can be doing things that raises money that also adds to our own principles. It doesn't go outside of our principles. Now it's quite difficult sometimes, especially for the older children. So often for them, they go to gurukulas, or they have an experience in the early part of their life as devotee. And as they get older, they want to do things, you know. They want some skill, they want some profession, they want to find some way, you know, to have more sense of, you know, material security. So it can become complex. There's no avenues for them. Then you have to struggle on your own. It becomes very difficult.
There seems to be a lot of debate about Varnashram system, what it is or how to set it up.
Mm.
It would seem to me that it's more something that will progress naturally rather than some... Well, because Prabhupada said we should have Varnashram colleges.
Right.
But it sort of seems things are naturally evolving rather than... I mean, I just wonder how much effort should be put into, at least in this community, specifically trying to develop some sort of Varnashram, or just letting it grow, evolve naturally.
I think the effort should be, as was happening around most of ISKCON, there's a little more focus on systematic training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where devotees, leaders especially, are giving more courses and classes on, you know, distinct things. So as we having more training, understanding in different areas, that of course raises the quality of the experience for everyone. And as we have more of a culture of high trust and of love. Because when there's a stronger culture of high trust and love, then there's a lot more kind of empowerment, where people are valued and appreciated more. When people are valued and appreciated more, there's a tendency to try to study to see what will be for their higher good, based on where they're at and how to bring them up. And so therefore it'll deal more with trying to see how to engage people, you know, based on their propensities. One is obviously much more inspired when they're engaged in something that they feel excited by.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of difficult. It's the devotee's duty to try to be ready to do whatever service is necessary. But it's the leader's duty to try to see how to accommodate each devotee as best as they can based on their nature. And then this way, you know, one can make a more significant contribution. When a person is doing things that's kind of out of their grain, they can do it, but they will not be as excited, nor will they be, you know, as productive as when they're doing something that's kind of more, you know, to their varna, to their ashram. Now we have manpower shortages, and that makes it difficult. Because sometimes there's a shortage of women and men to do various services. So the tendency is whoever's available, we try to engage them. And there are times when there's not much choice that, you know, we have to see that things go on. But it's not, you know, the best for long-term development. So as there is the idea of family and teamship, because in a family you have so many differences, so much variegatedness. But the idea is that there's diversity with the unity. So our unity is based on, of course, trying to please Srila Prabhupada, trying to follow the spiritual rule and law that Krishna has given us in the Shastra. So we have this Shastra Sadhu Guru that should bring our unity. And in this way, as there is a focus on trying to engage the devotees more effectively for their present as well as their future, this will automatically bring about Varnashram Dharma. There's more focus like this. So with sufficient training, so that there is proper education, understanding of how society, community should work, what is best, bringing people literally from the mode of ignorance to passion to goodness to transcendence, while trying to see how to engage each person so that it creates a powerful family. As we do that, then people will be encouraged based on their differences. At the same time, they will healthily honor someone else's services and ashram also. Because a lot of our work in the past has been a little bit centered more on productivity, on the building of the buildings and even distributing the books, which is necessary for establishing a foundation. But then once the foundation is established, then there has to be more boiling of the milk, boiling of the ghee. There has to be more refinement. So we're at a time now where we really have to sort of refine our position and our consciousness, become more focused in such ways. Because the Maya is getting stronger. I mean, Kali Yuga is advancing pretty fast, but secular things are just becoming more and more intense. Even, you know, we can all see in the last 10 years how so many things now are being institutionalized in mature culture and accepted that previously were considered bad, and people were a little bit timid about, you know, getting involved, or people would do sinful things and they would kind of do it secretively. But now more and more sinful things are being pushed like campaign on people. You know, casinos everywhere, and now more, you know, illicit activities in terms of slaughterhouses and prostitution and confusion about, you know, genders, you know. You know, there's a big push now, you know, from the gay community, not only pushing their lifestyle, not only living it, but then trying to push it on others in certain ways. I mean, everyone's looking for affection and love and caring and people. They do different things in trying to find it. Some things are not always so healthy. And even now in some places in America and Europe especially, and it's probably going to begin to happen here, and some of the textbooks that the kids are reading in schools, it's just giving all kind of deviant stuff that's being taught in terms of lack of integrity, lack of morality. So the kids will be growing up thinking that this is okay. So many things on the television and the cinema, you know, just promiscuality. But when you see it so much, you start thinking, this is okay, this is all right. Begin to, you know, see it in terms of being a healthy role model. So many of the heroes in some of the stories are just people who, you know, who are just debauchees. But then kids looking at that, even adults, begin to internalize such thinking. As we were discussing earlier, then the creeper gets intruded on by so many unhealthy patterns. So we should not be condescending to the point that, you know, we're thinking that we're so better than anybody else. We should not, at the same time, we have to be very careful to keep a certain psychological space from this onslaught of material culture. Be very careful. One is to relax, take things too for granted. Then where there's danger will conquer over one. It's like we're in a room and there's a dangerous, poisonous snake. We just kind of relax, we go on, you know. So one day the snake is going to jump on it and bite, because the danger is there. So if we are too comfortable in associating with danger, then at some point we're going to be influenced and affected by that danger. So we have to keep some distance. Like when Lord Chaitanya cleaned the Gandhija temple, so he cleaned the gross, cleaned the subtle, and he cleaned the round, so that also the dirt wouldn't come back in. We have to go looking at the gross, look a little closer, what subtle stuff is going on is unhealthy. that we have to kind of create boundaries and create arrangements, barriers, so that we don't go back due to the sinful desires that are still with us, or due to the rapid progression of sense gratification. We keep a distance so it's not so close to us. Since for so many lifetimes we've been saying yes to sense gratification, it doesn't take a lot to draw us back into it. For most of us, most of this life and most of previous and many lives, we've been engaged in some sense gratification. So to get drawn back to it, it's a snap. It's not so difficult. And so much of the senses, the mind, and the intelligence has been saying yes to the relative things. And now we're trying to move away from that. So it takes an extra effort. Such. Anyone else?
Now, how can we deal with devotees, whether they're ourselves or others, who've been materially scarred in their lives, and in some ways we've all been brought up and or experienced things that have affected us because of Kali Yuga,
mm-hmm.
and if that hampers our devotional life and progress, how can we, what's the best way to heal or to try and realize to get help, because sometimes the mind is not working properly in the material sense, and it's hard to train it on that level, let alone try and train it on a spiritual level. So, what would be the best way to, or how can we see a situation like that?
Yeah, we have to face it, feel it, and release it. See, sometimes if we are in denial, then it just has an undercurrent, like a cancer, and starts eating out to one's life force. So if we're in denial, we're just repressing, then there's an issue, because it'll come out in some other way. And if we just face it only without understanding that for some reason Krishna has allowed such things to come into our environment, such things to come into our life space, certain things to happen to us rather than something else. And so we realize that there's really no accident. Accident means that there are things that we are not in control of, we're not fully aware of. There's never an accident for Krishna. So for some reason, Krishna allowed, has had us to experience various things. Now we should be asking ourselves, what am I or was I to learn from this to become a better person? See, our learning is not only from the auspicious things. Often we learn more from the challenges, difficulties and setbacks. We can make greater progress often from those experiences, and then being able to process them, use them for growth, and move on. So we should be looking in this way, that some reason having to deal with certain issues in our life, maybe sickness, it may be for me feel that we were not used properly in our services, denied. We have a difficult husband, difficult wife, problems with our children, economic problems, go on and on. But each of us are having like our own tests that we have to deal with. And Krishna's arranging special tests. Just like Krishna arranged a particular way how every single devotee was able to join. We each think how we join. Krishna arranged just situations that allowed each person to, you know, to make that leap of faith. And it's different in so many cases according to what was needed. But he was noticing what Sarvas Cham Sannivistal Matak Smitir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Krishna in the heart is observing that this soul is trying to come to me. Now let me create some situations that will entice them to come closer. And so he arranged some people's case, a book, some cases, a friend, boyfriend, girlfriend, some situations where I was just in such distress, and Krishna arranged an opportunity. So all of those situations are there, but it varied according to what was needed for each particular person. So the beauty is that same Krishna who heard our prayers, responded, and brought us into the devotional experience. The same Krishna who's still there, who will bring us through many other challenges if we allow him to. Yet there are always complexities in devotional service, because we're trying to get away from the deviations, get away from sense gratification, get away from karma, from the lust. And so there's many temptations and many challenges. Just like in school, it is natural that every now and then there are tests. And the test is designed to let us pass on, to get certified. And without those tests, then it becomes difficult for categorizing one. So Maya is really, we know, working for Krishna. And Maya's duty is to keep testing to see how much more we want Krishna over what she can offer. To what degree do we really want to go back home? Are we pretending? Are we more interested in just trying to enjoy what Krishna can offer rather than to really be real servants? So Maya will present many, many different types of allurements. The Brahma Samhita explains that the same Maya that seemingly just the living entity's greatest enemy attacking us in all kinds of ways, that when Maya is noticing now that such jiva is fixed, then Maya becomes like a stepping stone, like a ladder, helping us to, you know, to progress. Anyone else?
Mm-hmm. I just often hear that, okay, so far till now it has served the movement, and now but I got to look after myself, and so it's like they just go out and understand to maintain, and just slowly sort of go away from the minimize the devotion service and the service to them, so because they say now, okay, I've learned enough things, at this number, now it's time I've got to look after myself. So how do we understand? The real thing is to balance both.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we actually deal with that kind of mentality?
It's a common mantra sometimes.
Yeah.
I've done my austerity, now I have to look after me.
Yeah.
I have to get a life. Well, yes, but things should not be mutually exclusive. Because we know that there's no ultimate security anywhere. You know, people are, every day somebody's going bankrupt who was extremely successful. Every day. Every day somebody is finding that they've come down with a chronic disease who were quite rather healthy. And we know every day somebody's dying. And every day somebody's getting sacked from all kind of mature, seemingly secure jobs. I mean, one of the worst things that's happening now, you know, due to these kind of globalization of markets and massive technology, is that people who thought they had very secure jobs, especially they're a little older now, they're in their 40s or late 40s or 50s, and so they can even go as high as vice presidents or presidents of corporations and find themselves with no job, you know, because of mergers or companies going through difficulty or downsizing, reengineering, or the fact that someone who's a CEO wants a person who's 30 years old, who is going to be more passionate, work harder, you know, work twice as hard, and maybe get the same pay. And so even though you can be very faithful to mature energy, and you went to school, got a good job, did all the good things, and now you find that your faithfulness has turned against you, and then you have no job. And then in some countries, even when people retire, as they spend their whole life, you know, all their working life, even for the same company, sometimes they're finding that their pensions have been reinvested and lost. And so, or they find that something happens where they do not get the pension they were expecting, the full amount. So there they've done everything, they've been a good worker, they've dedicated themselves, and now when they're no longer working, they're struggling like anything. They wind up, you know, just barely being able to maintain. So then where is the security? Say, I want to get a life, I want to get secure. Yeah, but where is the security? We ultimately have to depend on Krishna. We do our best. We should be practical and not just to, you know, minimize the fact that we have to take care of body and soul together. But at the end of the day, we realize that there's no real security other than Krishna's shelter. See, a lot of things, it sounds a little harsh, but a lot of things is distinctly based on karma. And there are some people, it doesn't matter where, what organization they would have been in, they have certain kind of difficulties in their life. And there are certain people, they have a certain kind of karma. And so, wherever they're at, certain things happen for them. And that's clear. So we come into the world with baggage. Doesn't mean we can't transcend it. But we have a certain amount of baggage. So if you got a lot of baggage, it's going to be a little more difficult trying to do certain things. Possible, but a little more difficult. See, and this is one of the reasons why it's so important that we are more mindful in our devotional life, devotional service. Because karma is so powerful. Even somehow we don't finish up in this life, but if we've really done nicely, then we come in with so many credits and a lot of things. In some people, that every few months they have a problem in devotional service. It's just constant, you know. It turns around. The other people, the other devotees, sometimes they join, and it's like from day one, they're sort of enthusiastic, they maintain, they go steady. It's not that they're not being challenged. In some cases they've had these heavier challenges earlier. In other cases, because there's a greater conviction about connecting with the spiritual culture, less attraction to certain material things, then the person remains more focused. So it's all individual, but it's very dynamic that Krishna is arranging based on our desires. We are much more in control than we normally think about. So many things are happening based on the aggregate of our own desires. So we have to be careful about what we're really desiring. Because it will produce things, not always what we want. It's like you go to the restaurant and you order something. And then the person brings out the food for you. But then once you taste it, you don't like it. You complain, I don't want this. But then the girl says, but you ordered this. Then you order number two, this is what it costs, this is what we brought you. She says, yes, but I don't want it. So sometimes, because you know, they like the taste. So there are times when we order something based on how our consciousness is functioning. And when it comes to us, we don't like it. Because we didn't expect it to be like that. But there's something about our own mind that has brought such an experience upon us. So anything we don't really like in our lives, we can change it by changing our consciousness. We have to change our consciousness and it will change. The other things that we can change, but nothing may really change. You know, the externals. Sometimes we change the externals, but we carry in our same mind, same conscience with us. You've seen that. You've seen some devotees who go to many different temples and they have the same problem again, again, again. Because it's not just the environment. The environment has something to do, but it's what they themselves are. So they run into a block, a certain kind of block. And so hopefully at some point you begin to think, I better work on myself. Better give a little more time to working on myself. Any last question? It's confound the charge of divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada ki. That's why I came here, so I can work on myself.
Thank you for the appreciation.